Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Let's talk Seahawks here.
Turn your mic on.
I've got it.
Gosh.
I've got it.
Guys, she was talking there for like a full 5 seconds without the mic on.
Stop, sir. Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sports. It's like when you hang up with a friend or they hang up and you're still going, but you talk so much that you don't realize they've hung up for like a minute. Michael Bumpus joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Bump, I would ask you how the greens are playing. It's not that nice out, though.
Nah, I am definitely inside watching the rain from my couch.
Now, ball today.
Curtis, are
you on the couch or are you at the window with your hand pressed against the glass with a tear down your
face?
Wanting
it to be summer.
The latter.
That's exactly, just a single tear.
There we go. Now, Bump, Stacy and I have not been able to get out to practice. It feels like they just, you know, on purpose, they have put these practice times out there during our show.
Because my takeaways would be too hot.
That's right. Yes, just scolding hot. Now, but Bump, you have had the luxury to be out there. What are some of the overall impressions that you've walked away with as you've kind of watched how they've been doing things?
Yeah, Jake, I've been out there, and the first thing that I thought about walking away is that this is just a young, excited team. You know those drills that Pete Carroll and the guys do before practice starts? You're going over the back. It's kind of like to set the tone, right? Get everybody amped up, ready to practice. With all this youth around, I mean, guys are ready to go. I'm watching Cody Barton talk stuff to Thompson. You know, I'm watching Artie Burns talk stuff to the receivers in a good way, though. You know what I mean? It's all fun and competition, but it's just a different vibe out there. They seem fast. Obviously, they should seem fast. They're professionals, and they're wearing shorts and T-shirts. Everyone seems to be on the same page as far as communication goes. And it's just nice to see some of these guys like Noah Fant come over and make some plays. Man, I've seen some tight end sweeps, some tight end screens. I mean, tight end in the red zone. I think these 12s might get something they've been asking for the last few years, which is to have the tight ends be a major part of this offense.
Now, there are versions of successful teams and successful offenses who've utilized their tight ends more. Obviously, Kansas City being one of those teams, the Buccaneers being one of those teams. But then there's been good teams who haven't. I mean, the Rams utilized their tight ends even less than Seattle did. Now, how do we know like that utilizing those tight ends is the right move for Seattle? And do you think it is? Do you think that this offense genuinely would be a better offense if they got them more involved?
Yeah, I think getting the tight end involved is the move. I think in any offense, your tight end should be involved because they're the guys who do a little bit of everything. They're attached to the offensive line and they help with the run game, and you can release them into the pass game. So when it comes to being deceptive, I look at that tight end position and I'm like, all right, they should focus in on that. And why should they do that? Especially because you have Drew Lock and Geno Smith at the quarterback position. And after going to this practice and seeing what Geno is doing, he's legit in this conversation to be the starter. I know we've been focusing on Drew Lock, but we got to throw Geno in there a bit more. And because you have Geno and Drew Lock, guys who are not going to be game breakers, guys who are not going to throw the ball for 400 yards one game, 4 touchdowns and no interceptions like we've seen Russell Wilson do, I just don't think they have that in them. So what do? You make them more versatile. And with being versatile, you got to use probably the most versatile guy on offense more, and that's the tight end, because you can line them up in different places and give so many different looks.
Look, Bump, I would like it to be known on this show for the record that I have been saying Geno Smith would be the week one starter. Jake disagrees with me. Where are you falling on this right now? If you had to choose today.
If I had to choose today, I mean, you have to choose Geno because he's the veteran and he's been through this, whereas Drew Lock is coming over and he's still trying to figure it out. I still think Drew Lock will be the day one starter, but I'm not ruling out that Geno could be the guy too, just based off of what I saw at OTA.
See, Bump, she is confusing with this question of who would you start today versus who do you think will start come week one, or who do you think the organization wants? There's a difference.
No. Those are two different questions. Who the organization wants would probably be the younger player that they got via trade. I'm sure they would love for Drew Lock to take off.
But that's not what you've argued. You've argued that Pete Carroll wants Geno Smith. I'm sorry, Bump. I don't mean to argue, and I want to bring you a part of the conversation here, but this is what Stacey's argued. She needs to stand by that, and she knows. She knows it.
I know. Pete Carroll likes Geno a lot. Bump. Yes. Tell me I'm right here.
Stacey, you know your promo for Stacey's headlines.
Yeah.
When you say I don't regret it, I don't regret anything.
That's exactly how I feel. Like, I don't regret it.
You gotta roll with it.
100%.
But now here's the deal, though, Bump. Stacey is right in the sense that Pete Carroll did strongly advocate for Geno Smith. He wasn't even on the roster, and Pete Carroll's saying we got to get Geno Smith back, and so Geno, he uses that for a little bit of leverage to get a bump in his contract and all that. But you know, why do you think it was so important for Pete Carroll to bring Geno Smith back, even though there is this strong feeling of the organization wanting Drew Lock to take this opportunity and run with it?
Yeah, I think Pete Carroll wanted Geno back because of the trust factor, right? He knows that he knows what he's doing once he gets out there. He also knows that Geno's probably not going to be the game breaker, but he also has this young talent that he thinks that he can develop. Mm-hmm. Nothing in life, nothing in football is guaranteed. There's no guarantee that the Hawks see all these attributes on film and it's automatically going to correlate to wins and success on the football field. They understand that most NFL careers don't work out. Most quarterback careers don't work out the way that you want it to work out. So in case that doesn't happen, you need somebody who can drive a bit. It's like when I take road trips down the West Coast, down to L.A., I'm going to do most of the driving, but just in case, wifey, you got to be ready to go. You got to be ready to take the wheel. If I'm tired or things happen, you always got to have a backup plan. And that's what I think Geno is. At this point, though, Geno legit is competing to start. Now, if Geno does start and he does win this job, I think the organization will be disappointed, but then they can look at each other and say, that's why we have this guy here.
Yeah, there's no question. There's absolutely no question about that, and I'm 100% on board with you. Now, one of the things that has been interesting to hear has been the fact that the team has not really done a lot of 11-on-11, Bump. And do you think that's more due to the fact that you have a lot of veterans that are not there at OTAs dealing with injuries and things of that nature? Or has this really been about preservation and about an emphasis of teaching at this point of the offseason for them? Is this just a new way of doing things, and this will be the way that they do things from this point forward?
Yeah, there's two ways you can look at that. You can look at the lack of 11-on-11, and say, okay, we just want to preserve our guys. There's no need to get into that. Or you can look at it and say, okay, these guys just aren't ready for that step yet, right? There's still some things that we want to tweak at practice, because practices aren't very long, whether an hour, 45 minutes, maybe 2 hours. There are some steps that teams need to take to get ready for 11-on-11, or maybe this is just the new NFL. When I went to Canada, it blew my mind that we were only at the training facility for 3.5 hours. I'm like, what? We're only here for 3.5 hours? But like, look, this is just the way the game is going. We found that we can take care of our players a bit more if we do that, and they perform better later on into camp. So maybe that could be like a ramp-up period. Like, look, we want to make sure that we're crossing our T's and are dotting our I's as far as alignment and assignment and technique. Because if you're not doing 11-on-11 often, that means you are honing in on your technique. So there's a lot of ways that they can go with it. I'm just going to say that it's more technique-based. They want to make sure guys understand exactly what they're doing and how to make adjustments.
Hey, Bump, on day one of OTAs, there was a little bit of a stir when Pete Carroll said that running back Rashad Penny was kind of nursing a hamstring injury. Of course, people giving Penny a hard time because he's been oft injured over his career, though it's May, so people probably shouldn't have been too worried at the time. However, he was back out there this week. How's the running back group looking as a whole?
Yeah, I was concerned, too, when I saw that. And I go to practice, and I see Rashad Penny take some snaps within there in the indoor facility. I'm like, okay, is he going to be out there today? And he was out there, and he showed a burst. I saw him break off 30 to 40 yards on a burst down the sideline. So it looks like he's getting healthy. I look at the running back position. I saw Travis Homer make some plays. Ken Walker made a beautiful play. I think it was a zone right, hit the second level, and then got down the sideline. They all look good. The thing about running backs is, man, like, they're not really tested until the pads get on, right? Because you have to break tackles. You have to get through that second level. You got to dip that shoulder. You got to stiff arm. A lot of the things that make a successful running back, you don't really see in OTAs. Whereas receivers, you can look at them and say, okay, they're getting separation here. They look fast off the line of scrimmage, or the quarterback, he's going through his reads. The running back spot is such a physical position that you don't really know. But what I have seen is that all these guys can go. All these guys are confident. I'm looking at the way they're interacting with each other. They're supporting each other. But Ken Walker does look a bit different than guys like Travis Homer.
I will let you kind of couch this by saying, look, it's really early. But was there any one play or one moment yesterday where you thought, I'm going to keep an eye on that guy moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's the obvious. It's Noah Fant. I mean, I saw him make some plays in the red zone. I saw the way they're using him in the backfield. It just really got me excited because they look like they have just multiple looks, man. And when you have multiple looks, I mean, the defense has to prepare for certain things, and you can kind of grow off of those looks. So it was just the obvious. I just love the way Noah Fant looks. I like his vibe. He looks healthy. He looks fast. He looks strong. Makes tough catches.
One of the interesting additions that was made in the offseason that everybody's just kind of like, oh, we'll see how it plays out because it's an older veteran. But Marquise Goodwin, Bump, I was really surprised to see them make that addition. How has he looked so far? And, I mean, he's really kind of playing a similar role that you would hope Dee Eskridge would play from a receiving perspective. How do you see this playing out, and why would that be a benefit to bring somebody like him into that receiving group?
Well, Marquise looked good, man. He looks like a veteran. The way he carries himself, he still looks fast as heck. He ran a 4.2. I'll give him a 4.3 now, which is still faster than most people in the league. And he is being used in that Dee Eskridge type role, the way we thought Dee was going to be used. And I still see Dee being used the same way. Let me say, Dee looks healthy. Dee looks good. But Marquise just looks like a veteran. I think he was brought in, and what did they say? He's not brought in to be a mentor. He's not here to mentor guys. Yeah, that sounds good. You're 31 years old. You've been in the league, what, 6, 7 years? You're naturally going to be a mentor, whether you like it or not, whether you realize it or not. So I think he was really brought here to show these guys how to prepare. He has a relationship with the wide receiver coach for the Hawks now, so why not bring a guy in who you know is going to do exactly what you want to do? Now, if he does make this roster, I still think he can help this football team because there's no substitute for speed, and he's sharp with his routes. You look at his stats, he really only had one really good year, but he's had some injuries, some other things going on in his life. He can still play. After DK and Lockett, it's receiver and catches by committee. And if you have a veteran out there who's going to give you a couple explosive plays a game, I mean, why not go out and do it and have these young guys just learn from him, whether it's consciously or subconsciously. He's there teaching, and these young guys are learning.
All right, last question here as we wrap up, Bump, with your takeaways from OTAs. As you were leaving the facility and as you're heading into your weekend, is there any one question lingering on your mind from those practices?
Yeah, my one question would be, how does Artie Burns fit into this? Because they really like him, and they're using him in multiple areas. They use him in corner. They're using him at nickel. You know, we have Justin Coleman over here now. You still got Ugo Amadi and Marquise Blair. Where does Artie Burns fit into this, and who wins that nickel spot? Because you go from last year to guys being injured to feeling like you had to play a certain player to now you're like, okay, we got options. You got a former first-round pick in Burns, too, who's competing for multiple spots. So I really want to see how he fits in this defense and what they do with that nickel spot, because they're going to run it a lot.
He is Michael Bumpus, joins us every Friday at noon. Thanks so much, Bump. Have a good weekend.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Bump.
Speaking of the weekend, this is actually next weekend. Sunday, June 12th is Little League Day at T-Mobile Park. All kids 14 and under will receive a pair of Ty France wristbands presented by the Mariners Kids Club. Get your tickets now at mariners.com/promotion. It's going to be a good series. I believe that's the Red Sox series.
Yes.
It begins on Friday the 10th. All right, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Now, the first headline is that Julio Rodriguez was named AL Rookie of the Month for May. But the real headline here, Jake, I went bitter. I went negative fancy with it. Of course I did. Of course I did. Does anything emphasize the Mariners situation more than a young star going unsupported during a horrible month?
Oh, come on.
The Mariners were 10-18 in May. They were absolutely abysmal, a winning percentage under 400, and yet had the AL Rookie of the Month, a fantastic stretch
Stacey,
of games for Julio.
Let me live.
Where is the
let
lie?
Let me live in the positive.
Where, okay, new headline rewrite of the negative rewrite is a Mariners horrible month capped off by good news?
Yes.
Okay, fine.
Yes,
okay.
That's exactly right. Okay. And you know what? It's going to be the start and the springboard into another great month of June.
You got
and
it, buddy.
The team is going to catch up to Julio. Okay? That's what's going to happen here.
They're going to catch up to Julio.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to be, how about this? They're going to be the AL team of the month in June. How about that? How about that?
Jake.
Yes. I said it. I said it. I'm not backing down from that.
I don't believe that you're not backing down from it.
Now,
what'd you make of Julio's May?
What I made of his May was just that this was so incredibly fun to watch a young superstar really be able to put it all together. And you see, this month, you saw every aspect of the talent that Julio possesses and brings to the table for this organization. Power, speed, defensive ability. His ability to affect the games, not only with his ability to steal bases, but yesterday, because of the traffic that he created, he forced the Orioles into an error, which ended up scoring a run. I mean, just Julio finds ways to make things happen, and this guy isn't just a one-trick pony in terms of what he does at the plate. This isn't someone just going off and just hitting dingers left and right, and that's all this guy can do. No, he can spray it all over the field and has shown the willingness to be able to do that, and that is really, really impressive for a young player. He is 21 years old. He is incredibly young, and he is so incredibly talented. Already, he is one of the most talented players in Major League Baseball, and hopefully he can continue to keep progressing, keep growing, because he's just scratching the surface as to what he can do.
I will say this. I think there were some Mariners fans hoping that Seattle would trade for Jose Ramirez from Cleveland. They obviously did not end up doing that. And it added a little bit of salt to the wound when Trevor Story went off in that series against the Red Sox. And then in April, Jose Ramirez was named AL Player of the Month. So it does act as a little bit of a salve to have not only Julio get the honor for May, but to see a slightly easier schedule. Yes, you will see Trevor Story again, but this time it'll be at your home. It'll be at T-Mobile.
That's right. So. And hopefully he doesn't do what he did last time, because that would be really painful to watch, okay? To watch everybody talk about how Trevor Story's power doesn't translate outside of Coors Field and to watch him do it at T-Mobile.
Oh, that's the worst.
No, thank you. I don't want to watch that. I don't want to see it happen at all. In this series, I want to see them win. Please,
I need
please,
to
please, please.
Pay closer attention to how Trevor Story. I did think that narrative was a little over the top, but I mean, if we're talking about hitter-friendly parks, comparatively,
yeah,
T-Mobile would be much harder.
It would. It very much would be.
So
yeah, but he's
not
also,
only in Coors Field, but
yeah, but he's
to the last series.
He is doing it exceptionally well right now. The month of May was very kind to Trevor Story in terms of his play and what he's been able to do and how much he has improved. I mean, he's hit 9 home runs, 37 RBIs, and most of that damage was done in the month of May. So,
team of the month. Next headline.
Market June. June is the Mariners' month.
Despite Phil Knight's offer of more than $2 billion, the Portland Trail Blazers have denied the team is for sale. The real headline here, Knight's reportedly going to increase his offer by allowing unlimited employee store access. Let me tell you what, that will get the job done.
If they did
that.
You
want to sweeten the pot? Yeah.
Look, hey, you know, if you want to see a 3 instead
of
a 2.
Do you know how expensive Nike is?
Oh, do I know? Yes, I do.
Yeah, everything you own is Nike. I should have.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a good chunk of it, somehow I find a way to get it, you know, for free or, you know, different connections and things of that nature. But, yeah, I pay for it, and it's expensive. And you know what is so tantalizing? The opportunity to get it like 50, 60% off. And also the Centralia store, you know, you go
the
to
little outlet down there?
Yeah, you go to their outlet. I mean, you find incredible deals down there. It's a trap. Every time I go down south to the cabin, there's the Centralia store, and I think to myself, just maybe, I could just take a look, just a look-see. And you walk out with more stuff than you intended. Like, you can't help yourself, Stacey. Every single person that walks into that team employee store, this would be a genius idea by Phil Knight.
You will be
open
worse
it up
off
to
for
the
it.
Public. Open it up to the public for a week. Do you
what
know how
no,
mad
no, no, no.
it would
Hear
be
me
in
out.
There? It would be insane.
He does like a Willy Wonka, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory situation.
Oh.
You have to buy, I don't know, some kind of, actually, let's make it fun, a candy bar.
That'd be cool.
Nike. And there's like five.
Why don't
people.
We just make it there's very like specific to this people. Show and do it in donuts? How about in donuts?
Five people that get to win a chance to go to the employee store for a day, and then secretly, they're trying to find out who can run the employee store. And now I'm taking this.
Now
too
you're
far. Too far.
You're getting
next
it really down the rabbit hole.
Headline: We
Weird. It is a weird movie and story overall. Have you really thought about it? First of all four of his grandparents share a bed. Weird. Secondly,
well, they don't have a lot of money, Stacy.
I know. It's sad and weird. And then secondly, how many of those kids die? For real. Where's Augustus? Where is he? Well, what happened to the little blueberry girl? Where is she? The girl
she
that fell
it,
down. Veruca
she
Salt?
Had it coming.
Veruca Salt, who fell down a garbage chute?
Yes.
What happened to her? We don't know what happened to the kids.
Do we really care?
They're kids.
I mean, but they were bad kids. They were bad kids. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure they're fine somewhere.
We don't know that they are. Last headline here. Commissioner Adam Silver says the NBA isn't currently discussing expansion, but did say at some point the league will invariably expand. Real headline, if not in 2024, then when?
That's a great question because I do not know. I do not know. I honestly don't understand the NBA, them dragging their feet through this process and constantly kicking the can later down the road and not embracing what should be in Seattle, which is an NBA team. The Sonics should be here, all right? And we've been screaming this the day that they were sold and left. But it just is such a mistake that the NBA allowed that to happen in the first place. They have an opportunity to right that wrong, and they're hesitant to do it. I mean, Seattle and Vegas would be two great markets, two incredible markets for them to tap into, and they know it. So I really don't understand the hesitancy whatsoever. I know Adam Silver talked about diluting the talent potentially of the NBA. Well, you know how you don't dilute the talent, Stacey? You don't create super teams. You don't allow that to happen. But that's a whole nother conversation. How about you keep superstars on certain individual teams and you build around them? That would make it a lot of fun, and that's a way that you don't dilute talent. But hey, that's a conversation for another day.
All right,
but making excuses to not bring the Seattle Sonics back to Seattle, like, it's a joke. Absolute trash.
Coming up in less than an hour, we're about 40 minutes away now. I have a caller question. If Baker Mayfield becomes available, do you want the Seahawks to sign him? Easy question for you guys. I'm going to open up phone lines in about 40 minutes. Before we get to that, we're going to take a look around the rest of the NFL. That's next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Taking a look around the rest of the NFL, we're going to start in the NFC East with the Dallas Cowboys, where there is a competition in the locker room. DeMarcus Lawrence is challenging Micah Parsons to see who can get the most sacks. Micah Parsons took that title away from DeMarcus Lawrence, who got just 3 sacks in an injury-riddled 2021 season. Parsons got 13 as a rookie, but DeMarcus Lawrence ready to come in and take that title back.
He may be ready and he may have the talk, but I don't think he's going to have the walk. I think Micah Parsons is taking over as the sack leader. And obviously for the Dallas Cowboys, they would hope that DeMarcus Lawrence and Micah Parsons have a very competitive competition this upcoming year. And DeMarcus Lawrence is obviously still very, very talented. Very talented player. And the thing I appreciate about his game is that he is somebody that gets it done in both the pass rush element of the game, and also being someone who can really break things up in the running game as well. So I think it would be a lot of fun to watch that happen, but I think Micah Parsons, look, at this stage of his career as a rookie, he's continuing to grow, continuing to find ways to be dynamic. I think that I don't think DeMarcus Lawrence has a chance. I think Micah Parsons is just going to continue to keep getting better and better.
All right, sticking in the NFC East for this one, going up to Philadelphia, though, A.J. Brown landed with a new team, the Eagles obviously acquiring him via a blockbuster trade with the Titans. Shocking draft day trade. Was that on the draft day, right? Getting up to it? Man, it seems like that was a month ago.
Was it?
It was.
AJ Brown?
Yeah.
It was Dale trade.
You know who's still reeling from that? Mike Lefko. Poor Michael Lefko.
Oh, boy.
Titans
poor,
fan.
Poor
I don't know
Lefko.
Why.
You got to be a Treylon Burks fan now.
I know.
Lefko. Get behind your guy now.
AJ Brown joins Devonta Smith in the wide receiver room, but he's staying very humble despite being a superstar. He says, look, in my opinion, Smitty, Devonta Smith, is wide receiver number one. He said, if he's going against cornerback number two, I expect him to dominate. We're just taking pressure off each other. Even being on the same sides, you can't really double. It's great to have another great wideout besides you. So he's coming in. He's not trying to take too much of the spotlight. But, Jake, my real question for you is, if you look at the teams that are most improved in the NFC alone, since I think if you're looking at the teams that are improved around NFL, the majority of them would be in the AFC, that being where some of the bigger trades happen and bigger signings happen.
Right.
Would you say that the Eagles are the most improved NFC team?
I would say that they're right at the top.
Right?
Yes. I mean, I would say, yeah.
They lost Brady but then got him back.
Not the Brady situation because you didn't lose him for a season,
yeah,
right? So no. You can't count him as a loss. But what I would say is that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have done a really good job in revamping their roster. You know, the guys that they did lose, they found ways to replace them. And I think that, you know, it's a really, you know, positive thing overall that the Buccaneers were able to they add somebody like Akeem Hicks.
Mm-hmm.
They add somebody like Russell Gage from Atlanta to the receiving core, who is a very underrated receiver. Like, I don't know how they were able to pull that off. And so they just got stronger in certain spots. Obviously, losing Ali Marpet, you know, one of the best guards in the game, is a tough one for your team. But they go out and they get Shaq Mason, who has been a very good guard for the Patriots and obviously played with Tom Brady for a long time. So I think Tampa Bay did a good job weathering the storm and keeping themselves a high-level team. But improvements, actual improvements, I think the Eagles have made the most improvements out of any team in the NFC. It's very, very impressive what they've done.
All right. Continuing on a story from yesterday, a little bit of an official update for that one. Yesterday, we told you there was a trio of retirements reported around the NFL with center Alex Mack, running back Frank Gore, and quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick. Those have all since been confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Fitzpatrick confirming his retirement, which was initially reported via a text message to a former teammate, Fred Jackson. This, though, consider this bit of trivia. Ryan Fitzpatrick played 17 seasons for 9 different teams, never appeared in a playoff game.
It's crazy.
Isn't that? You would
that
think that just
crazy.
By accident you would appear in a playoff game. Like, you would just happen to show up. 17 years. 17 years in the NFL. No playoff appearances. Jake, I want to hear how startled you are by that news.
I'm
but
not
also,
startled by it. Just because...
Well, he's usually going to teams that don't have a solid quarterback situation.
Correct.
Hence, those teams are probably not going to be going deep into the playoffs.
Yeah, and with Ryan Fitzpatrick's nature, it's just so volatile, right? I mean,
no one really signs him to be your long-term starter.
No.
At least not in the last several
but
seasons.
He never really was able to do it on a consistent basis throughout an entire season. You'd have a half a year where Ryan Fitzpatrick is just lighting up the scoreboard and playing unbelievable football, and then he would fall off, right? Like, it never was consistent. His best year as a pro was in 2015 with the New York Jets. That was his best year, and they had a really good football team, and they just barely missed the playoffs at 10-6. So, you know, it's pretty crazy when you look at it, and you're right. In 17 seasons, you think you would just happen to be on a team that is able to sneak their way in the playoffs, but I think that was also kind of the unusual craziness of Ryan Fitzpatrick's career, like you had mentioned, is that he was always in an unstable situation for most of the time, and he was a backup quarterback or somebody who was not planned to be the starting quarterback going into that particular season.
It's always really disappointing when you look at some of the great players to have come through this game to have either never appeared in a playoff game, if you're Brandon Marshall, or to never win one or more than one. I can't remember if Calvin Johnson won just one or appeared in like a handful but never won. I think he appeared in a handful but never won, but I might be wrong on that one. But there's just been so many. Barry Sanders might be another to either never win or maybe win just one. So many amazing careers, Hall of Fame level careers,
yep,
of guys that just stayed with franchises that could not get it together.
That's why you have to look at what has happened here in Seattle over the last, you know, 12 years, or look at the last two decades. You know, you look at the, you know, run that Mike Holmgren had in building this franchise up and making it the franchise that was respectable in the NFL eye, and then Pete Carroll taking it to another level. That's why you do have to really appreciate what has happened here. That doesn't mean that you have to settle and you're okay with just being a team that just makes the playoffs. You have higher expectations. There's nothing wrong with that. However, the perspective of understanding how difficult it is to win in the NFL and how unique those opportunities are is something to, you know, take notice and to appreciate the sustained level of winning and success that has happened here and that we've been able to, you know, enjoy, you know, really over the past decade.
Yeah, Barry Sanders, over the course of his career, they won one playoff game in 1991. Otherwise, Detroit was 1-5 in the postseason.
Wow.
Barry Sanders, 1-5 in the postseason, meaning if you are like a...
That's more playoff appearances than I would have guessed. I wouldn't have guessed that he had made six playoff appearances. That actually is surprising to me.
I want to say Calvin Johnson has like three or four.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure. Obviously none for Ryan Fitzpatrick, though that's a different caliber of player that we're talking about. But there are some still surprising ones. Joe Thomas.
Right. Andre Johnson for the Houston Texans. I mean, he was a fantastic receiver that people often forget about, who, you know, wasn't necessarily blessed with great quarterback play throughout his entire career. There's quite a few guys like that, you know, you never really got to see them be a part of a good team. And, you know, just a shame that they, but it makes it all the more impressive that they were able to stand out and have, you know, unbelievable careers despite all of the turmoil going on around them.
All right. New from ESPN, Rob Domofsky, who is a staff writer that covers the Packers, interviewed running back A.J. Dillon, who says that he has seen Jordan Love get his swagger back. The problem, Jordan Love remains the backup in Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers, I don't know if he's leaving anytime soon. He signed a three-year, $150 million extension. So what's next for Love? I don't know. Do you think that Jordan Love could be traded over the next 3 years?
Yeah, I do. I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to sign him to an extension before he even gets to play a down?
Right, exactly. He's going to play out of his rookie contract.
That doesn't make any sense. I mean, what's the precedent for giving somebody a contract like that? You know, and if you're Jordan Love, you don't necessarily want to do that. Maybe you sign a one-year deal, right? I mean, realistically, you could sign maybe a one-year deal outside of that and say, all right, let's see how this year goes, and if I live up to being a first round pick, then I'm going to come in the following year and ask for a ton of money. And so maybe that's how it plays out. But yeah, it certainly would be very, very unusual to today's standard to have somebody like Jordan Love, a first round pick, not play a down for five years as a starting quarterback, and then eventually get your shot, right? That just would be very unique. But, you know, who knows? I think Aaron Rodgers is not going to see the entire 3 years of his career. That's just of this contract in Green Bay. That's my hunch.
All right, we are going to look back, something we're doing every Friday now, at our favorite moments of the week. We had a surprise guest, plus Taylor Trammell spilled about a unique collection. That's next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up in less than 15 minutes, your calls. Your question is going to be, if Baker Mayfield became available, would you want him in Seattle? Simple, right? Very easy. I'll give you that number to call in just a couple minutes. First, though, it is Friday, which means we're looking back at our favorites of the week on a Friday. I've got two here and two really fun moments from this week. We're going to start with an interview. Mariners outfielder Taylor Trammell joined us, and we asked him a question that stemmed from a New York Times interview. I'll explain it in the response that you're going to hear. But basically, this really fun article in the New York Times looked at the use of cologne and perfume and fragrances by MLB players and interviewed players on what they wear, how much they wear, whether or not they wear it, and how they feel if they don't wear it. So I asked Taylor Trammell a very simple question. All right, Taylor, last question here. I'm not sure if you saw it, but there was a New York Times article that came out just the other day about players wearing perfume and cologne. You've been around the game. Who are the strongest smelling dudes you've been around, Taylor?
Me.
Really?
Do you?
No, like, no, yeah. I collect cologne. Yeah.
Whoa, what are you? Okay, so what are you wearing for this series? I feel like I'm like on a red carpet right now. I'm so excited.
So, don't judge me.
I am not judging you at all. I have so many bottles of fragrance.
I mean, Taylor, listen, man. This is just between
you. Are talking
you
to the right person,
Stacy, and me. It's
no
all
one
good.
Else is listening.
Look, okay. So for this, well, I kind of wear one cologne for my. I think I have over about 50 bottles of cologne, maybe.
Wow.
I like collecting them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I collect them. And it ranges from different seasons of the year and stuff like that, all that other stuff. So this series, well, not this series. I kind of wear it every single game. Baccarat Rouge 450 by Maestro Francis Cujan.
Okay.
Don't look up the price or anything.
Like no. Don't even worry about it. I am right on board with you. I literally just got a new fragrance the other day, Yves Saint Laurent, and I am about it. And
Okay, so question.
If you have a fantastic game, you hit a home run, do you wear that cologne the next series or do you switch it up?
I wear the same thing. I wear the same thing every single game.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And so to that point, I hate to do this to you. To that point, people kind of know that I like cologne. Even in spring training, Jesse Winker, we had our interviews for the year. Jesse Winker got me Bond cologne. And I had my interview, and he got me Bond. So that was kind of like
nice.
One of the cool things for spring training.
I think that might have been my favorite individual interview from the week. Now, we had on lots of guests and lots of experts, and I'm going to get to one of them in a second. Obviously, that was a fun interview. But talking with Taylor Trammell,
so much
one
fun.
Of the most likable guys, but I did not expect him to be like, oh, me, I'm calling myself out. Also, you looked at the price of that cologne. Wasn't it like $400?
Didn't you think we were going to get the juicy details on someone else? Like,
someone
hey, Taylor,
in.
Spill the beans on someone else, please.
They were like, Stacey, first you asked George Kirby if he has a brother he doesn't have. Then you asked Taylor Trammell who the smelliest person on his team is, and it's him. So he has to call himself out. You're on a roll now.
Right.
But it was a fun interview. He's a great guy, easy to root for. And he's done well. He's done really well since coming back to Seattle.
He has. And you know, one of the things that we talked about with him is the, you know, the growing process, right? Of
the mental stuff.
Yeah, the mental side of the game. And it's so important. And a lot of athletes, you know, Stacey, you know, peeling back the curtain here. So many athletes, especially at the professional level, they work extremely hard to get to where they are. And for a lot of these guys, they've been the best of the best of the best to climb the ranks and to get to where they are. And when they find failure for the first time, some don't know how to handle it, or they don't know how to handle it the right way and channel it for an opportunity to improve and grow and be better. And that can be incredibly challenging. And so what I love is that, you know, mental sports performance, you know, training has really grown. I mean, there's great people in the industry. You know, they're Michael Gervais, the late great Trevor Moad, may he rest in peace. You know, a great friend of mine who was really a pioneer in the industry. Justin Sua, who, you know, works with the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, there's so many great people out there and so many great resources. John Gordon, who really emphasize, you know, this element of the game and can help people grow from an athlete and into your everyday life. But for someone who struggles with that, being able to cope with it, react to it appropriately, and to be able to continue to believe in yourself and your process despite the failures that you go through, that can be incredibly challenging. And I think Taylor Trammell, you know, spoke very openly with us about that. And that was one part of it that I loved, you know, in talking with him outside of the funny aspects of him, you know, spilling on himself about his fragrance collection.
He was phenomenal. He was a great interview. It's on the Jake and Stacey Show podcast, which you can get wherever you get your podcasts. The majority of the interview, like Jake said, is him talking about the mental game and the mental adjustments. And it's just really fascinating to talk about, like, the psychology of being an athlete, which is a really fun interview. Last highlight of the week here, well, I should say one of my other favorite moments of the week as we take a look back, is my birthday was on Tuesday. And you guys got a surprise guest. All right, let's take a look around the NFL.
Hold on, Stacey. Before we take a look around the NFL, there's someone that has called in.
Yeah, there's somebody on line one.
Oh, okay. Can we take this call here?
Her name is Mina in Bristol.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mina, are you there?
Hello. Yes, not actually in Bristol, but very much here to say happy birthday to Stacey.
Oh my God! Thank you, Mina.
Our own Mina Kimes here.
Oh, thank you for calling in. That's awesome.
I'm on my way onto the show.
Yeah, it is awesome for you to call in and wish Stacey a happy birthday. We will not hear the end of this,
no,
of course.
No, we won't. You're the best. First of all, my voice got so annoyingly high when I said, oh, my God, it's like hearing it made me cringe. And secondly, you did not hear the end of it. I'm still talking about it on Friday.
Yes.
She's the best. Yeah. I love every time she joins. And well, that was a great interview as well on the Jake and Stacey podcast.
Absolutely.
She stayed with us for a while.
And someone who is, you know, NFL Live all over the place, you know, you just, there's good people out there and great friends. And Mina is certainly one of those who, you know, very, very short notice took the opportunity and the time to call in and wish Stacey a happy birthday. So shout out to Mina for being the best and always making time for us. And we appreciate it. But Stacey, you're incredibly popular. You are,
you are so
awesome.
Oh,
I mean, look at the people that flocked to you to wish you a happy birthday.
It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Here's your question. If Baker Mayfield becomes available, I'm not talking via trade. I'm talking about he is available. You can sign him. And let's say it's on the cheap. If Baker Mayfield becomes available, would you want him in Seattle? It's a simple question, but results so far are mixed. Brock Heward put out a poll, and it's a 50-50 split with over 3,500 votes. So we want to hear from you. Call 206-421-3776 now to give us your answer again. That number, 206-421-3776. Do you want Baker Mayfield in Seattle? Your calls are next.